Let's talk some association on the way out the door. We are joined right now by a senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, SiriusXM NBA analyst, co-host of the Crossover NBA Show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Again, the pride of UC Davis. Still a good friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. Howard, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, Romy. How are you?
Good, good, dude. Good to visit with you. Let me start off by asking you, Howard. Some players say they're not really cool with this idea of the playing game format for the playoffs, but when you take a step back, how significant is it and how much action has it added to the end of the regular season?
It's added a ton, Jim. I mean, look, it's April 30th. Now, granted, this is not a normal year, but we are, you know, 2 weeks left in the regular season, and in a normal year, 2 weeks left in the regular season means you've got a bunch of teams that are locked into playoff spots, maybe a couple that are on the fringes of trying to still get there, maybe some jockeying within the top eight to try to get to the home court range or whatever. We now have two-thirds of the league still competing because the Chicago Bulls and Toronto Raptors still have a shot at making the play-in. Maybe not the Raptors as much. Chicago's still on the fringes of this. That's the 11th deep team in the East. Still has reason to try to win. If without the play-in, the Bulls have pulled the plug by now. They're quote-unquote playing the youth. They're taking all their vets and just putting them in mothballs. And, you know, would the Warriors still be going all out right now? They probably would. All right, they're a game out of eighth, so they probably still would be. But they're 10th right now. And it's exciting because Steph Curry will still be in some sort of postseason, whether it's just a play-in game or it's a couple play-in games, or maybe they actually win the play-in tournament and make the eighth seed. There's so much more intrigue now that it can't be anything but a good thing, because in a normal NBA season, as I say, you get down to the last two, three, 4 weeks, and teams are, we're not making eighth, so we're pulling the plug, we're out. And on top of that, you've got the teams that are in that 7-8 range that are desperate to be sixth instead, as we saw the Mavericks, who were complaining about it. But hey, to their credit, they're up to sixth now, because nobody wants to be seventh and eighth and have to be in the play-in. So it's just incentivized teams all up and down the standings, aside from the bottom three or four. That can only be a good thing for competition and quality of play.
Howard Beck, my guest. So a quick follow. Does that mean that the era of tanking is officially over in the league?
So I toyed with this in my column last Monday in our morning shoot around on SI.com, and I said, hey, you know, the tanking era as we know it is over. That doesn't mean tanking is over, but the era is over. The distinction being this: the tanking era, mostly characterized by what the Sixers did under Sam Hinkie, was about, you know, first of all, multi-year tanking, being bad year in, year out, so you could get multiple bites at the apple, multiple high picks, because the lottery's a crapshoot, the draft's a crapshoot, you need as many chances as possible. It worked. They got Embiid and Simmons, and they're set for a very long time because of it. But that style of tanking was already chipped away at by the flattened lottery odds that the NBA instituted a couple of years ago. You throw the play-in now on top of this, and now teams have much less incentive to, you know, be just throwing away games at the end of the season. Because there's two kinds of tanking. There's the long-term, where you go into a season knowing we're just going to tear it down, just be bad for a while, and then hope for the best in the lottery. The other kind of tanking is we went into the season thinking we'd be good, turned out we weren't good enough, and so now late in the game we decide to pull the plug, bench veterans, trade away guys. That stuff is still going to happen on the fringes. There's still going to be some of it, but there's so much less incentive to do it now. So is tanking gone? No. Is the tanking era over, where we have a lot of this just widespread? Yeah, I think the era is over.
Fair enough. Howard Beck is joining us. Howard, let me ask you about the Knicks. You and I have talked so much about the Knicks over the years. They've won 10 of their last 11. The only loss came to the Suns. Did you ever expect them to be described as the red-hot New York Knicks in late April?
Or how about the plucky, you know, gutting it out New York Knicks, nobody saw coming, feel-good story? Like, no.
Right.
Nobody saw it coming. The most optimistic Knicks fans didn't see it coming. In fact, a lot of them a year ago at this time were ready to tell Julius Randle, it's been real, dude, but see you later. Like, he was a really frustrating player, as he had been in New Orleans and as he had been in L.A. But this is a new Julius Randle. And they've also got, obviously, a new coach in Tom Thibodeau, who's done an incredible job. They've got one of the best defenses in the league, with a lineup that, at a glance, you wouldn't look at and say, oh, yeah, that's an elite defense right there. Like, the outline of that was not there. It's because Tibbs does what Tibbs does. And to the Knicks' credit, they've responded. And Randle just completely transformed his game. Very rare to see a guy make this kind of leap in year seven. It happens occasionally, but it's rare. And no, look, nobody saw this coming. It's one of the best stories of the season by far. The Suns, who you mentioned were one of their only losses recently, are the kind of the Western Conference version of that. But the Suns, you could see coming. Like, Devin Booker was already a young star on the rise, and we already knew what Chris Paul could do for a team. So that one, they're way better than we thought they'd be, the Suns. But what the Knicks have done is just truly incredible.
We are joined by Howard Beck. Randle, to me, is unbelievable. I can't believe the transformation he has made that you just pointed out. What about the Lakers, Howard? Anthony Davis has been back. They have not played extremely well with him coming back. There's now a report from Woj that LeBron James is getting closer and closer and couldn't come back sooner than later. Where does that leave the Lakers? They've still played good defensive basketball, even without these guys. But in terms of the seeding, does it really matter to them? And what's going to happen when they do get LeBron back?
I've said throughout this whole saga with Anthony Davis and LeBron out, as long as they don't fall into the play-in, like, and even then, like, it's the Lakers. If they've got LeBron and Anthony Davis, you know, they can make their way out of the play-in. But to their credit, they've been just competent enough without those guys. They're not likely to fall into the play-in. Like, it could still happen, but especially if LeBron's coming back, you know, in the next couple of days, they're not going to fall into the play-in. So beyond that, where they are in the standings doesn't matter. They're the Lakers. LeBron James has been to, 800 consecutive finals. They don't need home court. They don't need seeding. They don't need to worry about matchups. They are the defending champions, and they have LeBron and Anthony Davis. And if those two guys are healthy, then I don't think all the other usual considerations matter. Those things matter more for an inexperienced. Like, it matters for the Phoenix Suns to have home court because they've never been in the playoffs. You know, Chris Paul has, but the rest of that group has not. The Utah Jazz, as a team that's just broken through to another level. Like, some teams, I think, need the home court edge more than others. The Lakers don't need it. They just need to be healthy. The one caveat I'll throw on that, though, Jim, is this. LeBron and Anthony Davis, Anthony Davis and Drummond are still kind of working it out, trying to get a feel for each other. LeBron will help that a lot. But plugging in a new starter, in Andre Drummond, who LeBron has never played with, and they now have 2 weeks to kind of like get a new chemistry and rhythm with these guys. I'm not saying it's like the biggest consideration or concern in the world, but it's a thing. Like, they need LeBron back sooner than later because I do think it's important to establish some sort of rhythm and some sort of chemistry before you get to the playoffs.
So we're talking to Howard Beck. Before you go, and I'm hearing what you're saying about the Lakers, you mentioned the Suns. I want to ask you about them. They were good in the bubble last summer. Then they add Chris Paul. So did you see this coming? For instance, looking back, should we have all seen this coming, or is this beyond all reasonable expectations the way they're playing?
Totally beyond all reasonable expectations. I mean, we know that the effect that Chris Paul can have on the team, we saw it with Oklahoma last year. And I think we all thought, okay, the Suns are going to finally end their 10-year playoff drought. Chris Paul will be the one to help Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, these guys break through. But I think most of us had them at like 6, 7, 8 in the West before the season began. That they're now in position to potentially get the top seed in the West, and they go against Utah tonight, big matchup in the Western Conference. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, huge credit to Chris Paul, but also to Monty Williams, who's done a fabulous job there. And to that young core, I mean, Ayton, Bridges, Booker, they've all taken strides. And, that team, it's a strange season, Jim, and a lot of weird stuff, a lot of unfortunate stuff has happened this season. But the Suns, like the Knicks, who we talked about earlier, they're just this great feel-good story for the season. They're one of the more fun storylines we've had.
All right, so Howard, I got about 60 seconds really quickly. Is Chris Paul making a late run for the MVP or Steph Curry, or is the Joker a lock in your mind?
Jokic is a lock, and I think Embiid is almost a lock for second. And then those other guys, like, they belong in the quote-unquote discussion. Everything's now about the discussion. But it's only a five-man ballot, Jim. And Giannis deserves to be talked about, and Kawhi deserves to be talked about. And, yeah, Steph, Chris Paul, you can go a lot of different directions with those lower spots on the ballot. We can't, unfortunately, squeeze them all on, which is why I now believe we should have a bigger MVP ballot like they have in Major League Baseball, and I know I'm going to get flamed for that because I already have.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why. I think that's reasonable. That makes sense to me. He's a senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, a SiriusXM NBA analyst. co-host of the excellent crossover NBA show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Howard, great to have you on, man. Thank you very much for doing that. Always good to talk basketball with you.
Thanks, Romy. Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend. Howard, nice job.